Alright, so as Bodhidharma said, the theme for the day is meditation and spiritual friendship. And in the morning, we focus quite a lot on ourselves, our relationship with ourselves, befriending ourselves. And the reason we did that, obviously, if you hadn't noticed, or you hadn't figured out yet, is this thing that sort of Jen was saying in her check-in about, you know, we can't really be friends with others until we can really be friends with ourselves. So I'm going to be talking a bit about that, the relationship between our meditation practice and the practice of spiritual friendship, and how these two practices support and inform one another. So just as some context, when I use the term spiritual friendship, I'm pretty much using a term that was coined by our teacher, Bhante Sangharakshita, to describe the relationship between two people that delight in the good in each other. And so it doesn't have to just be friendships within a spiritual community. It's any friendship through which you gain nourishment and through which you grow. So just in case, if you're not Buddhists, we just wanted to give you that, you know, so you could think in terms of any friendship that you have. But I myself have friendships that are not within the spiritual community that I still consider spiritual friendships. So, you know, I've personally been very curious and interested in how does my own personal meditation practice impact my spiritual friendships, and vice versa, how do my friendships have an effect on my practice? And where I've landed most recently in these reflections is thinking specifically about vulnerability. And when I was leading the practice earlier, you might have noticed that I dropped in the term vulnerability, you know, being aware of other people's vulnerability and our own vulnerability. So I'm just going to say a little bit about vulnerability in relationship to meditation and spiritual friendship, and then say more specifically, say a little bit more about spiritual friendship kind of towards the end of the talk. So what are we aiming for in the spiritual life? That's sort of where we need to start, isn't it? So what is it that we're actually trying to do? And for myself, how I approach that question, at least right now, is that my practice is really about coming into a more real, a more unmediated, direct experience of my own vulnerability as a human being, actually. And then through that, connecting then with other people's vulnerabilities, and really just of all beings, of everything, of the world. So what does that mean? We are all ultimately vulnerable, right? We're all going to die one day. We can't do anything about that. We're all subject to sickness. We're all subject to all sorts of unplanned for things that are going to happen to us in our life. We all know this. We've all gotten to a point, I'm hoping, in our lives that we've already experienced the hardships of life, really, the things that we can't control. And we're also completely dependent on everything around us. We're dependent on other people. We're dependent on the conditions that support us, the food we eat, the air we breathe. So we're not separate. We don't exist separate from the conditions in which we operate, the other people in our lives. And when the conditions that we're dependent upon cease, we too shall cease. So when the body dies, we will die. We will be gone. We are not separate from this body. This is a Buddhist talk, by the way. So if you're not Buddhist, you can, actually, even if you are Buddhist, you can decide whether or not you agree with anything that I'm saying. But I'm stating sort of the Buddhist view on things. So just to say that clearly, because you might believe there's a soul and that that soul goes on after death, and that's fine. That could be your, that can be your belief system, and then we can talk about it. And we can check it out if we think that's true. So just to say a little bit about the truths that I'm trying to elucidate is the truths of impermanence. So all things ultimately come to an end at some point. Nothing lasts forever. And insubstantiality. Nothing exists independent, you know, independent of anything else. It's all connected. We're all connected. So this is also the truths of conditionality and interconnectedness. So all things arise dependent on conditions and cease when those conditions cease. So that's just sort of to lay some groundwork, and also to, Yeah, sort of a definition is when I use the term vulnerability, that's what I mean. So I don't mean sort of emotionally vulnerable, although we are also that way often. But really what I'm talking about is this human experience of being completely vulnerable to the conditions in which we find ourselves. So through our spiritual practice, we learn to see. So the good news is, it's not all doom and gloom. So we learn to see that there is beauty in vulnerability. And actually, that vulnerability in and of itself is beauty. It is what makes our life meaningful. It's what makes our experience a beautiful experience, because it ends, because we're interconnected, because we're dependent on others and the conditions around us. And this truth of the beauty in vulnerability is actually what liberates us from suffering. So it is the doorway into liberation from suffering, or what Buddhists sometimes refer to as enlightenment. Although I don't really know what that means, so I tend to not use that word very often. And this suffering is the suffering that we cause ourselves and others when we try to deny our vulnerability. So this is sort of, I'm sharing my own reflections. So where I'm at right now is, well, why do I do that? Why do I cause suffering for myself? And why do I cause suffering for other people? Well, it's because I'm actually trying to deny my vulnerability. I'm trying to, you know, yes, I am in control of my life, and I do know what I'm doing, and I can handle it all. And actually, I'm not in control of my life at all. Well, somewhat. You know, there's a veneer of control, but we suffer when we realize that we're actually, when that veneer is cracked and we see through that delusion. So so often in Buddhism this is referred to as dukkha, or unsatisfactoriness, suffering. So there's a suffering that sort of underlies our experience. It's sort of like an itch you can't quite scratch, or stone in your shoe. It's just dukkha comes from, the root is a wheel that's a bit wobbly. So it's just the ride, the journey is just a bit not quite smooth, is it? There's always sort of like this underlying something that's not quite right. And no matter what we try to do, we just can't quite ease it. We're trying to control our world by trying to get at making ourselves happy, but we're doing that through things that are ultimately not going to give us that ultimate fulfillment. And we do that in all sorts of ways. So, you know, the most mundane example is sort of surrounding ourselves with very comfortable material things that make it all sort of nice. And on a deeper level, sort of the way that we try and fix ourselves and try and fix other people to make it all okay. This is who I am, this is how I am, this is what I think, this is what I believe, and that's who they are out there, separate from me, and that's what they think and how they believe, and I either like or dislike them, and it's because of our difference or our connection. So one of the biggest questions that I've been playing around with is, how do I fully love myself and others while still knowing this truth of vulnerability, this truth of impermanence? So how do we actually completely open up to other people and let them in and fully love them, knowing that one day they're going to die and we're going to die? So it's a koan, really. It's a riddle. How do we touch into our own vulnerability and soften around the truth in order to more wholeheartedly support ourselves and others? How do we meet each other in the space of groundlessness and support each other in familiarizing ourselves with it?
Can you say that again?
How do we meet each other in a space of groundlessness and support each other in familiarizing ourselves with it? So I'm going to quote Dogen. This is one of my favorite quotes. I come back to it over and over again. And every time I come back to it, I get something really new out of it. And it's quite simple, actually. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to awaken to all things. To be awakened by all things is to remove the barriers between oneself and others. So I'll read it again. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to awaken to all things. To be awakened by all things is to remove the barriers between oneself and others. So the first part of that quote has been what I've loved, and then I was looking it up because I wanted to make sure I had the quote right, and I saw the second sentence, which I'd never quite, I'm sure I'd read it before, but it never quite stuck, and I thought, oh, that's perfect. It's the continuation of studying the way and studying the self. Interconnectedness. So how do we do it? So I'm going to talk a little bit more about meditation, following up from what Bodhilila was sharing. So you were speaking so eloquently and from your own experience about the process of integration and how that works for you. So we do need to integrate ourselves. We do need to come into contact with all of our disparate selves to become as fully whole and human as we can be, and have confidence in that, have confidence in our whole self, that we have everything that we need. We have everything that we need right now to wake up to this truth. For me, lately, the word has been self-contained. I want to be more self-contained. I don't want to be dependent on other people and how they feel about me or what they think about me for my happiness. I want to be able to have contentment that's coming from me, that's infinitely available, readily apparent, relying on nothing external or outside of ourselves for happiness. So that's becoming whole. A whole person, an integrated person. So that seems kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it? So how does that relate to then connecting with others? But if we think about it, it does make sense, doesn't it? Because we can't fully show up for other people if we're not fully showing up for ourselves. Only part of our... I'm very aware sometimes, like you were saying that earlier, like when someone's talking to you and you just know you're not really listening. Mm-hmm. I am aware that... it's just sometimes it's just like about 20% of me that's actually showing up for the person that's directly in front of me. So we do need to show up for ourselves completely. And how do we do this? Well, we've been doing it. So we do it through self-understanding, going deeper into our experience, what Bodhilila was talking about, and self-love. And these are the two, what Sangharsa, our teacher, often refers to as the two wings of enlightenment. So you can't have awareness without compassion, and you can't have true compassion without awareness. So if you think, if you like imagine someone like a carer, like a nurse or a parent attending to a person, you know, real attention, full attention is full of love. You can't be attentive without also the element of love. So we begin to integrate ourselves through meditation, as we have been doing today. And it helps us over time to see ourselves more clearly and also see how we are in relation to other people. So we sort of slow down enough to establish this calm abiding in ourselves. And from that foundation, we become more familiar with the workings of our own minds. And we also become more and more sensitive to how we affect others. And I can confidently say more and more, more and more familiar with how we affect others, because I'm at a point right now where I'm realizing that it's just endless, really. It just continues, you know, awareness just keeps deepening. So, and we never get to a point where we can say, yes, now I'm fully aware of how I affect others. So that's quite a challenge, isn't it? And we also begin at that point also to see that these seemingly solid ideas that we have about ourselves and other people aren't the truth. So we have these ideas, but they're not actually the way things are. And we see that there's no one fixed, unchanging self. And this is good news, because it means we can change, and it means other people can change. So we can be together on that path. So as I've been saying, the more integrated we become, we can really bring ourselves more fully into an authentic relationship with other people, with our friends. We're more in touch with ourselves, and we're not in denial anymore about the parts of ourselves that we don't like. So we're more willing to share all of ourselves in friendship. We're more willing to speak honestly about what's really happening for us, what we're really experiencing, and to take risks in our friendships, because we trust in our own process of development and we trust in the other person's process of development and unfolding. But it's hard. So yes, it is hard. And this is why we need love. So this is the other side of it. This is why we need positive emotion. We need joy, compassion, equanimity, faith. We need all of those qualities as well. We need to work intentionally on cultivating them so that we can hold what we find through our exploration of ourselves, through this integration process, and really open up to that. And we need to be able to be... we need these positive emotions to then also be able to really be with others and to see them completely, both all of their thoughts, all of their faults, and all of their potential. So I don't know if you've ever had the experience of being in bad mood. It makes it really hard to take in other people. So again, just to really be able to see others, we've got to be more open, more positive. One of my very good friends, Kruna Devi, has reflected a lot on spiritual friendship and given quite a few talks. And so I asked her to help me out with this talk, and she sent me some things, and this is a quote from her. "The purpose of our solitary meditation practices is to break down the barriers between self and other, to realize non-duality, to see all beings with as much love and kindness as we see ourselves and our good friends." So we did the Metta Bhavana this morning, so I'm going to say a little bit more about that practice. So through this practice of metta, cultivating loving kindness, what we're doing is we're bringing this more integrated whole person into relationship with a deep intention for well-being for ourselves and others. So we're bringing those two things together. And it's ultimately a practice of self-transcendence. So we're actually purposely trying to get out of our own way, to transcend our own self-interest. And ultimately what we're doing is we're learning how to respond rather than react to our own negative mental states and to what we experience in others. And to open up and respond in a more compassionate way, both, again, to ourselves and others. So I'm going to come back to this thing of spiritual friendship, or what's often referred to as Kalyana Mitrata. So Kalyana meaning the beautiful, auspicious, lovely, or good, and Mitrata meaning friend. So when we practice spiritual friendship, what we're practicing is becoming more familiar and intimate with the lovely and good, both within ourselves and each other, and engaging with our more higher selves and supporting others to do the same. So there's an ideal, right? So there's who we really want to be, the really wise, open, compassionate, loving person, and then there's who we are today. And through spiritual friendship, we're able to support each other in actually engaging more with that higher self, engaging more with those qualities that are already in us, actually. So in a way, spiritual friendship is like a collective project of deepening authenticity with ourselves and others. And it's also a practice of becoming more and more receptive to ourselves and others. So that kind of gets back to what I was saying before about just becoming more sensitive to our effect. So we get to know ourselves through our relationship with others, and also we can help others get to know themselves through their relationship with us. So one of the things about being ordained is sometimes you're asked in a very formal way to give feedback to others, either people coming up through the ordination process or people in the order who are being put forward to ordain other people. And this is a great opportunity to practice spiritual friendship and to reflect back. So there's a commitment to reflecting back each other and helping each other, you know, helping our friends get to know themselves better through that reflection, because often our friends see things about us, both positive and not so great, that we maybe don't see, or they can frame it in a way that helps us make more sense of it. But it takes a lot of courage to do that, and also trust and honesty, So yeah, I was saying about these, you know, our higher selves. So through spiritual friendship, we're coming into connection with our own virtuous qualities and those of our friends. So we're resting our awareness on the seeds of enlightenment within us and within the other person. So an enlightened being, the only difference between us and enlightened being is that those virtuous qualities are fully developed. But they're in us. You know, we've seen it today. We've been quite virtuous with one another today. It's been very friendly, very kind, very open. So in the metta bhavana, I think I led us in sort of finding a positive feeling in the body and just resting our awareness there and encouraging it to grow, to flourish. So that's what we're doing in through spiritual friendship is we're rather than focusing on our faults and the faults of others, we're just shifting our attention to what's good. So when we practice metta, we're also learning how to soften around our views of ourselves and others. So we begin to accept people more fully for who they are. We begin to see that they too are changing as we are, and that they are just as susceptible to suffering, sickness, old age, and death. So we're touching into their vulnerability, seeing that we're connected to them through this shared experience of being human. And they're not just, you know, a projection. They're actually a real person out there. And they're just doing the best they can. They're just growing how we're growing in whatever way that works for them. So again, from Kruna Devi, when our metta takes the form of an equal response to all the people in our practice, when we have no preferences for our good friend over the difficult person or neutral person, when we have broken the barriers, the walls we construct between self and other, we experience ourselves more objectively. We don't get as wrapped up in the drama of our lives. We recognize that all things change and that we are not in control of everything in our lives. We see how we are more loving to others when we love ourselves, and that experience breaks down the feeling of separateness and the need to be different. When we experience deep metta, we enter the void, or that expansive state where love has no self-reference and no specific object attached to it. It is universal. So I'll read that last part again. When we experience deep metta, we enter the void, or that expansive state where love has no self-reference and no specific object attached to it. It is universal. So spiritual friendship is a practice that can bring, it is just as important as meditation in terms of a pathway towards the enlightened state. I said that word again. So it can support us in deepening insight into the true nature of things. And through a deepening connection with others, we begin to loosen around our preferences and expectations of other people, allowing them the space to be their own person, as I said before. So in this way, we're also beginning to experience ourselves as less rigid, allowing our own preferences to fall away and opening more and more to other people and appreciating them more and more deeply in their own right. And this deepening understanding of ourselves and others lays the foundation for a more authentic engagement with one another, which finally gives us all permission to change, to grow and develop into more wise and compassionate beings where we no longer fix each other in our minds, but allow for pliability, for a new being to emerge and keep emerging. So we rejoice in one another's good qualities and urge each other on to continue to grow in the spiritual life. So that's sort of the, that's the ultimate sort of expression of the enlightened mind, is a friendship in which it's just a flow of encouragement and support and continued growth. So there's a story of two of the Buddha's disciples, Moggallana and Sariputra, and it's said that after they gain enlightenment, they still continue to meditate together and to support each other in their practice, and they continue to engage in friendship. So it wasn't that the friendship was just a means to an end, but it was actually an expression of their enlightened mind at work. So I'm going to read one last quote from Sangharakshita, and then I'm going to lead us in a practice called it's a meditation that I think Kruna Devi made up, and she called it the mindfulness of spiritual friendship. So that's what I'm calling it. But it's not, you know, it's not a traditional practice that we do in our tradition. It's just some a way of sort of helping us to reflect more on our own experience of spiritual friendship, or helping us to sort of touch into what spiritual friendship is about. So Sangha Rinpoche says, you know, we're living in a time where we don't have access to the Buddha. So he's sort of he's trying to encourage us to then, if we don't have the Buddha, then what do we have? We have each other. So this is him encouraging us to have to really take advantage of that. Though we don't have the Buddha, we do have one another. We can develop spiritual friendship with one another. We can help one another. We can encourage one another in our practice of the Dharma. We can confess our faults and weaknesses to one another. We can share our understanding with one another. We can rejoice in one another's merits. We have, of course, to practice the Dharma ourselves. No one can practice it for us. But though we have to practice the Dharma ourselves, we do not have to practice it by ourselves. We don't have to practice it on our own. We can practice it in the company of other like-minded people who are also trying to practice the Dharma. And this is the best way to practice. In fact, we may say for us, it's the only way to practice.